So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Time to play the game. Time to play the game!
Politics.com. You can check out all the latest on investigation stories and everything else we're covering, like the one from yesterday with LDG Development and the Front Gate Apartments, and Mayor Fisher, of course, pulling his little illegal shenanigans here in Louisville. We have a big story coming on that next week. I want you guys to pay attention to. I think you'll be really, really excited by knowing that somebody's going to finally be able to hold this guy accountable. In the meantime, new day, new show. Monday, Allison Lunnigan Grimes had announced her intent to run for the U.S. Senate seat currently held by Republican Mitch McConnell. We touched on that Monday night. Last night with our guest, John Bingham, with StopFrontGate.com to discuss this serious matter concerning a land acquisition. We decided we wouldn't be able to really spend much time on that, so we decided we'd spend some time tonight talking about that, and then maybe moving into some national issues. I want to hear what you guys have to think about this announcement. 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. For you guys that are listening in the listening queue as I speak, make sure you hit that number one on your dial pad when you want to be heard on air. For everybody else, you can join us in our live chat as well. Always some way to get a hold of us. I tell you what really struck me with Allison Lunnigan Grimes' announcement was how poorly this thing was set up. It's very clearly obvious that this was some sort of a plan to deal with the Democrats, but they didn't have a clue how to present her. Allison Lunnigan Grimes' biggest claim to fame is her daddy is Jerry Lunnigan Grimes. That's it. That's her biggest claim to fame. Sure, she was elected as Secretary of State, but she got that on her daddy's name, not because she's done anything meaningful. It was interesting to me some of the highlights of this, and the Washington Post even covered this, which was even better. But at a press conference, she didn't even have a banner that said Grimes for U.S. Senate. I mean, something as simple as a banner in the background sends a message. But instead, she had a banner behind her for her 2011 Secretary of State campaign. Now, it's not expensive to get a banner. You can get those things in a couple of days. It's not like she hasn't known for months what she's going to do. But she didn't even have the audacity or the money, I guess, to even buy a banner to flank her. So I thought that was pretty curious in itself. She never made the announcement on Twitter, Facebook, or anything else. As a matter of fact, one of her top advisors actually called the AP on Monday morning to let them know that she was going to do the announcement at 3 o'clock. And, of course, she was a half hour late for her own press conference. She didn't even make it to her own call to press conference on time. You're really not doing yourself any favors when you're sitting here making the press wait when you're a nobody trying to get ahead. And so, I mean, there's so many things wrong here. It's just incredulous to me that they could be a serious or that the Democratic Party could consider her a serious candidate because they've done absolutely nothing to even aid in the announcement. And for anybody to say, well, she didn't finally make up her mind until Monday morning, folks, that's a lie. That's a lie. You don't just decide to run for one of the top jobs in the United States on a whim. Well, I'm just going to go ahead and do it now. This is something she's known about for some time. Nobody could tell us any different. The real deal here is Alison Lonergan Grimes is trying to make sure that she's not going to be implicated in the illegal leak of illegally obtained information on Mitch McConnell in regards to Ashley Judd. It was leaked by Curtis Morrison and Sean Riley. We can link Alison Lonergan Grimes to Sean Riley directly. The recording was leaked after Ashley Judd had decided to not run for office. And that information was given to her on this recording in a personal conversation with Sean Riley, who from insider sources tell us that Alison Lonergan Grimes told him to take it to her and get her out of the race before she would consider the race. So when we look at this, this is nothing more than making sure she got some distance from any heat that may come down to her on that aspect. And we're going to go ahead and put some of that out there in the very near future on the website as well, because I'm sick of these kind of politics. But if the Democrats were even serious about her, you know, they would have at least a website. There's not even a website out there for her. There's no online presence whatsoever. And they've been talking about this for months. So here we've got even two of the most obvious websites have been bought by somebody else that lives in Florida. Grimes for Senate and AllisonForSenate.com. You know, these things would be normal website names for somebody like her running for office. And they've been purchased by somebody in Florida, presumably to resell at an overinflated price. They weren't even smart enough to buy up the damn website domain. So it's pretty clear that she's out of her league, if you will, if the announcement is any indication whatsoever. Alison Lonergan Grimes has done nothing right at all. She shows up half hour late for the press conference, spends 5 minutes or less there, gave a statement, responded to two questions, and ran away. One prominent Democratic consultant was actually upset and told The Fix that it was a rollout that was unworthy of a major political campaign. And this was one of the worst rollouts they've ever seen. So they did this anonymously, of course, so they couldn't get nailed for anything. But I think that's a very telling statement. Are the Democrats really serious about taking on Mitch McConnell? Because if they are, they just screwed up. Alison Lonergan Grimes, as I mentioned Monday night, will not make it through to the election in November 2014. There's just too much dirt out there that I haven't put out yet and a whole host of others know about. So it's comical that this was the way that they decided to out her. I just don't understand it. In local news, we've been talking for the last week or so. We've mentioned the felon constable David Whitlock situation, how he's under investigation by the Commonwealth Attorney for violating his most recent plea agreement. I say most recent because this guy has more lives than a cat when it comes to diversions and plea agreements. That was in court on Monday. Commonwealth Attorney has said that Whitlock has broken the agreement. They are going to pursue action against him, and he's supposed to be back in court on August the 15th, at which point the judge will rule whether he's going to remain a free man or he's going to have to go to prison or if the agreement stands. So we'll find out more as we go along with that. There are other stories out there, though. One of the biggest today, and I kind of want to get into Obamacare and stuff on the second part of the show, but one of the biggest right now to me has to do with Egypt. As everybody knows, Mubarak was taken out of Egypt, if you will. You know, he was in power in Egypt and kept, for lack of a better word, he kept the peace the best he could in a Muslim-dominated area. Of course, the Muslim Brotherhood and Barack Obama and Valerie Jarrett put their little noses in there, got rid of Mubarak, and installed, and I do say installed, Morsi. Morsi is supposedly the first democratic elected president in Egypt, and he was just ousted today on a military coup. This is a serious situation that brings us to all kinds of questions and brings us right back to one of the old ones. You know, just exactly how much influence does the Muslim Brotherhood have on Barack Obama? Let's go to the phones real quick. This might be Paul Holliger with Stop It.
Hi, Ed. How's life tonight, man?
Oh, not too bad, man. I'm trying to weed through these numbers. I normally recognize your number, but I'm weeding through so many tonight. It's crazy. What's going on, my friend?
This Morsi thing is kind of interesting from a lot of different angles, but I only want to jump in on one angle in particular. And
okay.
That is the fact that Morsi was presumably elected in a democratic process, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I say
right.
Presumably because over in that part of the world, you never know if the elections are fair. You just don't know, okay? The people of Egypt, who'd been under a dictatorship arrangement for generations, had a chance to democratically elect a leader, and now they advocated for the overthrow of this guy by their military.
Right.
You know, yeah, I think it shows when you have large numbers of people, not just in Egypt, but even here, there's a large number of people in every society that wants somebody to lead them. They don't want to have to think. Being in a democracy, if a person wants to do well in a democracy, they have to think. They have to act. They have to take responsibility for their actions. And the people in Egypt, while there may be a bunch of them that want to be free and take responsibility, it's pretty obvious that the masses want a leader. They want a father figure. They want a dictator. They want to be told what to do. And unfortunately, Ed, that particular parallel seems to apply to our United States, because why else would somebody with no credentials get elected to be president of these United States?
Well, I don't disagree with what you're saying. I find it very interesting. We continue to butt our nose where it essentially doesn't belong. This particular situation with Egypt is very, very telling. I've got to be honest with you. I mean, this all started because Obama, essentially wanted control. The Muslim Brotherhood wants to control Sharia law. We've got a whole list of people that are involved with this whole Sharia law game that are right here in the White House. And that's what makes it so disturbing. I mean, Valerie Jarrett, there's no doubt in the world that she's part of the Muslim Brotherhood. This goes all the way back to the Clintons with Huma Abedin and everything else. I mean, this is a systemic infiltration, if you will, of the Muslims and Sharia law right here on American soil. You know, I don't understand why nobody's making that connection, I guess, in mainstream, considering that Morsi, the reason they wanted him ousted in a military coup was because of his Sharia leanings. Why are they ignoring this story? Paul, you there?
Yeah. Why does the mainstream media ignore any story that could bring any type of negative light on things that are not part of their agenda? You used to be, if you just open up yet another door, used to be we could rely on the media, both in print and television and radio, to go out there and be the people that ask the tough questions of those who held the power. And I mean, that's been the tradition here in the United States for decades, okay? But here in the last 20 or 30 years, the same mainstream media has chosen sides. They've become partisan hacks, if you will. When the Democrats are in, they tread lightly. They don't ask the tough questions. When the Republicans get in, they grill them. They rake them over the coals. So the mainstream media has decided some time ago to be nothing more than a political arm of the Democrat Party, and that's why they excoriate Republicans, which, by the way, I don't necessarily mind them excoriating Republicans because Republicans haven't been particularly adept at doing things. But we can't attribute neutrality to the mainstream media. They don't do their job. That's why people like you, Ed, are doing what you're doing. You're doing the job that the mainstream media used to do, but no longer.
Well, and I appreciate that, Paul. I really do. And I think you're right. And I'm not alone. There's thousands of us these days that are trying to get the messages out. But what's really interesting here, you know what, I'm going to open up Mayo's line real quick. I believe this is Mayo on our 502 number. But what's really interesting here is the fact that we're continuing today spending all of this time on this so-called illegal immigration reform and all this other stuff. We want to legalize 20 million illegal aliens, the majority of which are Mexican and everything else. And the only reason they want to do that is because it's cheap labor. I think that that's a given. You know, everything about our country when it comes to slavery days on has always been about cheap labor. So the illegal immigrants are the ones who are the cheap labor and driving the labor costs down. So now we legalize everything, you know. But that's not really the biggest problem when it comes to illegals and problems in this country. The Barack Obama White House, led by Valerie Jarrett, and most people say she's the president, and I'm one of them, you know, have brought in the Muslim Brotherhood, Sharia law-minded people, who believe in the Quran that you lie, cheat, steal, and kill to do whatever you want to do and accomplish your end game. And the end game is to take over the United States and make us succumb to Sharia law. And this administration has done one fantastic job of trying to make that happen. And they're not the only ones. The Clinton administration started all of this, you know, with Hillary Clinton and beyond. And we'll get into some of that in just a minute. Mayo, your mic is open. What's on your mind, my friend?
Oh, I mean, number one, I agree with what Paul said, and kudos to you for, you know, what you do and the hard work you do, and wish you were recognized more, I mean, besides,
well,
you know, by the people that listen to the show, because the actual investigative reporting and the facts that you do report, with the lamestream media, they need to do their job and report. If they want to give their opinion, then let them have an editorial instead of put it into their reporting. On Paul, I'm hoping I'm not, I've been misunderstanding, about Egypt, but he almost made it sound as if he thought it was a bad thing what had happened. But me, I wish we could get the fervor in the United States that they had there. I mean, there's 77 million people in Egypt, and 5 days ago, 22 million of them had signed a petition, and that's why 3 days ago, the general in the military said if he did not meet with Parliament, then the military would step in.
Okay, and, you know, the military did step in. You know, that's ultimately what happened. They have now, the top military commander has announced that Morsi has been ousted. He's replaced by the Chief Justice of the Constitutional Court. You know, and essentially they're going to have military control until they have another election. But, you know, to bring this back to where I'm trying to go, and I apologize if I'm not answering your questions correctly, guys, but to bring this back where I'm trying to go is Mubarak was supposed to be the answer to all the Egyptian problems and the problems in the Middle East. We were going to help Egypt have their first democratically elected president, and these problems were going to go away. That's what Obama told everybody. Now, what he didn't tell everybody was, and what was really the biggest insult that mainstream refused to point out, was the fact that Mubarak was really one of the biggest allies that the U.S. had in Egypt. Nobody liked everything about Mubarak, including me, but he was able to maintain control in a highly volatile, intense situation in Egypt at all times. He didn't let Sharia take over. He probably allowed a little bit more freedom, but more importantly, you know, he stood with the U.S. as an ally, and we worked with him as an ally for forever. And then Obama came in as part of his Muslim Brotherhood ransom wannabe, and him and Valerie Jarrett decided they wanted to get rid of him because he was against Sharia law, which is what ultimately created the problem we've got today. They helped install Morsi, Mohammed Morsi, as the president. The U.S. turned her back on Mubarak, turned her back on the ally situation we had had for decades, and decided that they were going to go ahead and install someone who was going to promote Sharia law. And now, what is it, 2 years later? Now we're right back in the same mess, a worse mess than we had in the very beginning. And it was all started with the U.S. government under Barack Obama. How do we justify this action? That's what I want to know. How do we justify this? Any answers? Pretty interesting, isn't it? So we've got two people going quiet on me. actually, Mayo just dropped. He had a problem. Paul, you got any answers for this or no? Okay, I'll just
my only point was that sheeple in Egypt are basically sheeple in any other part of the globe, including the United States. And
sure,
the fact that these folks, you know, the fact that this guy got elected democratically, it's just fascinating that, you know, they at their first opportunity to throw him out, they did. It's kind of like they are experiencing what's called buyer's remorse, you know, that they bought into what he was selling in order to get elected, and lo and behold, turns out they bought the proverbial pig in a poke. Well, Ed, isn't that what we ended up getting here? We had a guy who promised hope and change, and by God, he's definitely changing stuff. And and the majority of people do not like most of the changes.
Well, and you know what?
But
I think you're right.
The loyal, yeah.
I think the whole buyers,
we're not on the verge of an overthrow.
No, and see, that exactly is kind of where I was wanting to get at. And I thank you for going there, because here's the situation. They're having buyer's remorse in Egypt, but we were the ones that made that happen in Egypt. We're the ones who started this whole thing. Barack Obama started this whole thing. Valerie Jarrett started this whole thing. Okay? They're the ones who decided that this was great, and they would love nothing better than to see Sharia law in the U.S. But Egyptians said no. We're not going to be treated this way if we're going to be a democratic society. So they've got the buyer's remorse, and 2 years later they're ousting Mohammed Morsi. Okay? So the question is, if we're the ones that are being the puppet masters in Egypt, our government is, and the Egyptians have the balls and the gonads, or whatever you want to call it, to stand up and change their system of government through protest and everything else that they had to do to make this happen, why is it that the American people can't stand up and do the same thing against this president and this regime? And that's exactly what it is a regime.
Well,
why is it that the American people are willing to watch this in Egypt knowing we're behind it? Go ahead.
One of the premises of your statement right there, Ed, has to do with what's called an equivalency. You're equating that the society, Egyptian society, is identical to American society, and we both know that it is not. It's just not. There's a whole different set of dynamics over there. But again, my point is the basic human tendency seems to be people want to be sheeple. They want to be sheeple. Therefore, they will fall under the spell, if you will, of someone who is saying things that they want to hear. Morsi got elected because he said stuff that he wanted, that the folks over there wanted to hear, and probably there was some election hanky-panky over there. But isn't that how Obama got in? Obama said stuff people wanted to hear.
Oh, I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. You know, the Obama administration has been one of the most secretive in history. We still can't verify any information that's coming out from Barack Obama, and I don't care what anybody says about the birth certificate, that is a key piece of evidence that's already been shredded apart by Sheriff Joe Arpaio out in Arizona and his special investigation unit. It's the truth. The evidence is clear. We still can't get college transcripts. We still can't prove that he even went to college or graduated. We can't prove whether he was on a foreign visa when he went to Harvard. We can't prove any of that because all of those records were sealed immediately upon him becoming president. And now, here we are a few years later, we can see this disturbing situation that's been going on, and it all links to the Clintons as well. Don't get me wrong here, folks. I'm not trying to let anybody off the hook, but let's face the reality here. You know, we've got Huma Abedin. She worked for Hillary Clinton as her chief of staff, her deputy chief of staff, and her whole family, her father, her mother, her brother, all Muslim Brotherhood operatives. Huma Abedin herself is directly associated with the Institute for Muslim Minority Affairs that was founded and funded by Abdullah Omar Nassif. He's a major Muslim Brotherhood figure who also financed Al-Qaeda. We know what's going on with Al-Qaeda. You got to be living under a rock for the last 20 years not to know that. She was also assistant editor of the journal published by her mother, the Institute of Muslim Minority Affairs. We've got all of these things on her, yet she was given a position to get confidential information and be able to use that by working for Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton knew all of this. Bill Clinton knew all of this. This wasn't anything new. These are the things that we have to put up with, and these guys are getting access to information, classified information, confidential information, that aids the Muslim Brotherhood in taking us apart. You want to get into Valerie Jarrett? She's seated at the right hand of Obama. She's the co-president at the very least. She was born in Iran. She's got some kind of a strange hold over Barack Obama and Michelle Obama, and I have no clue why. But she's been involved in everything. When we talk about Al-Qaeda and the things like that, she's the one who kept Obama from ordering the killing of Osama bin Laden. You know, that was done. They killed Osama bin Laden. They went around him and Valerie Jarrett. He didn't have anything to do with that. Not one damn thing. That's been proven in testimony by the people that were involved. Her father-in-law is a communist, Vernon Jarrett. Vernon Jarrett is a communist who worked with Frank Marshall Davis, who was very instrumental in Barack Obama as a child. A lot of people believe he may be Obama's real father. I don't know. But when we look at all of these things and everything comes into play, it's not a big surprise to see us getting involved in the Middle East, and the Muslim Brotherhood is leading the way. That's the concern for me. I don't see any other way to determine that, and it's just a couple of people. I'll give you a list of more in just a minute. Mayo, go ahead.
Funny, and to go with what Paul was saying about the sheeple, why do we keep submitting? I mean, Tennessee just passed, I don't know if it was an act or a constitution or amendment or something, but made it a law that you can't say anything against Islam. I mean, how does that affect not only, the Constitution, the First Amendment, but Tennessee's own Constitution for falling under the spell of the sheeple? Why are people that lethargic when it comes to their own rights?
Well, it's fascinating. It's fascinating because we're willing to suspend the First Amendment and eliminate the First Amendment when it comes to talking about Muslims or Islam or people associated with terrorism. But you can still attack Christians, you can still attack God, you can still attack religion everywhere from a First Amendment standpoint, but you can't attack Islam. I think you bring up a significant thing. And, oh, by the way, for those who don't know, in August
of 2008. See this guy right here, you fuckstick? Sorry.
Huh?
Just had a guy about hit me.
Oh, okay. So for those of you who don't know, in August of 2008, Obama went on a big tear to try to hide Valerie Jarrett's Iranian background. He got all kinds of help from the media. They were willing to go ahead and let Obama say anything he wanted or to and push Valerie Jarrett as Mother Teresa, if you will. They wouldn't allow the Middle East ties she's got to be made a matter of any public record at all. And even Iranian.com, folks, declared Valerie Jarrett is Iranian of the day in August of 2008, a couple of months before the election. So here we've got, And Obama, of course, goes on to say that he trusts Jarrett to speak for him on anything, especially dealing with delicate issues, you know, and that he don't make any decision without running it by her first. That is way too much power for someone that is this closely involved in terrorist organizations. You know, once again, we've mentioned Vernon Jarrett, you know, radical ties, Langston Hughes. It's incredible to me. Then you throw in the rest of his people, Bill Ayers, Bernadine Dorn, Tony Resco, Jackie Grimshaw, Louis Farrakhan, you know, all of these people are communists or tied to the Muslim Brotherhood in one way or another. If we want to talk about who's in the White House, and this is very crucial too, you know, that we have Muslims in the White House, the Assistant Secretary for Policy Development for the U.S. Department of Homeland Security is Arif Alakhan. Alakhan is tied to the Muslim Brotherhood. Mohammed Alibieri, he's a Homeland Security Advisor. He was at a conference that was honoring Ayatollah Khomeini. You know, we've got this. He went on a rant against attacking, he went on an attack for anybody wanting to prosecute terrorist fundraisers. He actively promotes jihadist ideology. You know, he threatened a Dallas Morning News journalist after they exposed his extremist views. You know, this is a guy that's in the White House Homeland Security. Are you kidding me? You've got Rashad Hussein, special envoy to the Organization of the Islamic Conference. You know, Hussein has been involved with all kinds of Muslim Brotherhood front organizations. Abdurrahman Alamadi's American Muslim Council, the International Institute of Islamic Thought, or the IITT, or the IIIT, I should say. You know, and that place has jihadists like Sami Al-Arian. He pled guilty in 2006 to organize a secret financial contributions to the Palestine Islamic Jihad, which is a terrorist group. They have ties to Jamal Barzanji. He's a founding father of the U.S. Muslim Brotherhood. You know, Rashad Hussein was also involved in the original Brotherhood Front in America. So, you know, we've got all of these different things. Salam al-Mariati, he's an Obama advisor and a founder of the Muslim Public Affairs Council. He's also his current executive director. You know, he in 2001, or after the 2001 attacks, he was a Muslim leader who said that Israel should have been added to the suspect list for terrorists. You know, and then you've got Ayman Mohammed Majid. You can go on hours with this guy, but he's Obama's Sharia czar. Why do we have a Sharia czar in the White House? You know, this guy was met by all kinds of people, and this Ayman is nothing more than garbage. And then you've got Abu Patel. He's the Advisory Council on Faith-Based Neighborhood Partnerships. Do we see a trend here? Go ahead.
Well, I just started saying from the liberal or the dem side, you know, you're giving facts, but they call it profiling. And since you're profiling, you are automatically a racist, and they'll try to silence you with hate speech. You know,
sure.
They don't want to listen to facts. I mean, to get to something, you know, you were talking about the different facts and the secretive, you know, Obama earlier. I mean, two things. If you want to believe the birth certificate is real, everything else. There's two documents written by two governments, the British East African Nationality Act of 1948 and the Kenyan Constitution of 1952, if I remember my dates correctly, and it's dry reading. But if you actually read it, Obama, up until age 21, never surrendered either his British nationality nor his Kenyan nationality.
Right.
So, I mean, we're supposed to go by the law and the facts, but here there's two facts by two different nations and governments that people just totally overlooked. You know.
Well, facts only matter to those. Facts only matter to those who decide which facts they want to pay attention to. I mean, they really do. You know, my facts may be different than your facts, but one thing is for sure. We can always argue about the merits of the fact. We can argue about, you know, the dot on top of the I or the slash across the T. But the bottom line is you have factual information. You can argue the merits of those facts, but it's still factual information at the end of the day. I'm going to argue with you on how to interpret that. It's like one of the biggest things with the Bible, man. Everybody wants to interpret what each different part of the Bible means. Well, this means this. No, it don't. This means this. That's why you have all these different factions that use the King James Bible. You've got Baptist use the King James Bible. The Catholics use the King James Bible. All kinds of people use the King James Bible, but they all interpret the different passages different ways. But, you know, we're talking about a man-made product, and we can't really base anything in fact because it's been passed down through the years. In this particular situation, we can base everything on known knowledge. You know, this is what makes it all incredible. You know, at the time, Jarrett was named the Iranian of the Day in August 2008 by Iranian.com. That article went on to say that Valerie Jarrett was Shirazi. Shirazi is Sharia law lovers. I mean, they back Sharia law. So we've got all these going on. And then we've got to start really looking at, you know, what else is going on in this White House. You know, you are, I think most would agree with this, including you, Mayo, and maybe I'm wrong. But, you know, you are who you associate yourself with in most cases. In most cases, the people that are closest to you are the people that you're more in line with. That's who you align yourself with. I think that that's human nature. Would you agree with that? Hello.
Yeah, I mean, whether you know, your environment, your upbringing, your religion, yes. I mean, you put your work, you associate your personal beliefs and your friends, you know, most of the time, yes, you know, we'll have the same beliefs. You pick like-minded people. So I
mean, exactly.
Yeah, what you're saying with, you know, what's in there, I'm going, what was it, Clinton's, was she even vetted? I mean, it was just like Hillary gave a signature, said, well, I took care of it when she was questioned about, you know, her vetting progress,
sure,
or her vetting process by the Republicans. And I'm like going, and your word's supposed to be good enough for me? Let me see the FBI, CIA, NSA background check, you know, into, you know. Mm-hmm. And if they had seen that she had the direct ties, her mother, her father, her brother to, you know, Muslim Brotherhood, I mean, this isn't like a, you know, second cousin of a third marriage thing. This is her direct family is in the Muslim Brotherhood.
Right. And that's exactly what we get to. You know, when we look at all of this in play, I mean, you know, you are who you surround yourself with. Now, does that mean that I have people in my circle that I'm like, nah, there's people in my circle that aren't, but these aren't people I'm going to run around with all the time or spend any significant amount of time on. You know, it's like an alcoholic. Alcoholics like to surround themselves with other people to drink. It's easier to justify your actions. And I think that that's the same thing we've got here. And I'd like to really just make sure people understand, because one of the reasons that I feel that way isn't just because of the people that Barack Obama has surrounded himself, this Muslim Brotherhood in our White House, and I say our White House, not his, you know, but look at all the Muslims he continues to keep bringing in and trying to deny. Sheikh Abdullah bin Baya, he had bragged on his website that he met with Team Obama on June the 13th. Now, the White House tried to deny that meeting ever happened, and then they had to backtrack and say, okay, it is. It did happen. But bin Baya is a Sharia thug. I mean, this guy lobbied the United Nations. He's the one who lobbied the United Nations to outlaw all mockery and criticism of Allah. That's the model that Tennessee followed. He raised money to benefit Hamas, a known terror group. He's a top lieutenant of the Muslim Brotherhood spiritual leader, Yusuf Karadawi. He exhorts followers to kill every last Jew. They've sanctioned suicide bombings, sanctioned the killing of our soldiers, you know, expressed support for executing apostates and stoning the gays. And they declare that the U.S. is an enemy of Islam, that's already declared war on Islam under the disguise of war on terrorism, and that we provide Israel with unlimited support. This is Sheikh Abdullah bin Baya. He's invited to the White House for a meeting with Barack Obama. You know, we've got to really start paying attention here. If you want to look, I think the writing was definitely on the wall. When Obama had his inauguration, I believe it was 2008 inauguration, that was the first time he aligned himself with the Muslim Brotherhood, other than having Valerie Jarrett as his interim director for the changeover. But, you know, he chose the leader of a Muslim Brotherhood group that had been named an unindicted co-conspirator in a Hamas terror funding case. That was who he invited to do the prayer during his inauguration ceremonies. Ingrid Mattson is the person I'm talking about, the president of the Islamic Society of North America, an unindicted co-conspirator in a Hamas terror funding case, gave the prayer on his inauguration day. You know, and the ISNA, in their defense, for lack of a better word, they've never denied their ties to the Muslim Brotherhood. You know, what really is interesting is the previous summer, federal prosecutors had rejected a request from the ISNA, who had asked them to be removed as an unindicted co-conspirator in that case because they didn't want to be identified with that anymore. But Obama didn't care. Obama didn't care. And then we've got all the cover-ups from Eric Holder, who refuses to take any action against these terror groups. And we're familiar with that, too. I mean, let's look at the track record. Fast and Furious, vote fraud in Philadelphia. There's not one thing that Eric Holder has done to hold anybody, any person of color, anyway, accountable, or any person of the Islamic faith accountable for their actions. You know, and we take this
all the way. Well, I mean, such with what you were saying, you know, Obama and that, and you know, the prayer. But I mean, such outrageous statements that. I'm a history buff. I can't say I would be qualified to, you know, be a history teacher. But you know, the statement Obama made of, and the great American Muslim tradition and all that they have contributed to the history of the United States. You know, I'm kind of paraphrasing there.
Right.
When? Since when? You know.
That's a very good question. That's a very good question. How do we do that?
And people, you know, the lamestream media let him get away with these outrageous statements. And since they do, that helps, you know, like Paul was saying, helps lead to the creation of the sheeple because, oh, well, nobody's disagreeing with it, so it must be true.
Oh, I agree. You know, and I mentioned a minute ago, Arif Alakhan. In April of 2009, he was appointed as Assistant Secretary for Policy Development at the Department of Homeland Security. However, what's really interesting with that particular person is just 2 weeks before Obama appointed him in April of 2009, Alakhan, who's known for calling the terror group Hezbollah a liberation movement, you know, he participated in a fundraiser for the Muslim Public Affairs Council. The Muslim Public Affairs Council has links to the Muslim Brotherhood as well through Hassan Hathout. He's a former Impact president. And he's a close disciple of the late Hassan al-Banna. Well, Hassan al-Banna is the one who founded the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood is a pro-Sharia group. Dalia Mogahed, Obama's chief advisor on Islamic affairs, is a pro-Sharia Muslim. We could go on and on and on. Hisham al-Talib was welcomed at the White House last spring as part of the faith-based and neighborhood partnerships meetings he was having. And this guy is an Iraqi-born Muslim, and he is identified by the FBI as a Muslim Brotherhood operative. So we're bringing these people, known terrorists, we're bringing known terrorists into our White House. You know, and with my friend Dale Gillespie out on hiatus for the next couple more weeks, I have to start thinking seriously about this whole conspiracy theory. If this president is going to bring known terrorists into the White House, how can we sit here and definitively say that terrorists are the ones who brought down the Twin Towers, or terrorists are the ones responsible for these different bombings on U.S. soil? Who's the real terrorist here? If we're going to have these kind of ties, who is the real terrorist? That's an alarming question nobody is really asking. It's strange. And Hisham al-Talib is also a founding member of the SAR Foundation, and the International Institute of Islamic Thought, which I mentioned a minute ago, the IIIT. The FBI customs officials say that these organizations laundered money for violent Muslim terrorist groups from Hamas and Hezbollah to Al-Qaeda and a Palestinian Islamic Jihad. There was an investigative journalist called Patrick Poole. He's the one who let it out, and this didn't take on mainstream. Mainstream didn't want to go that far. But investigative journalist Patrick Poole reported recently that the Obama Department of Justice, Eric Holder, folks, he dropped the planned prosecutions of the IIT leaders, including al-Talib. These guys were already getting ready to be prosecuted, and Eric Holder said, no, we're not going to do that. So he's covering for these guys. Why? Why are they covering for these people? I don't get it. We're going to take a quick break, come back. We got to get one break in, folks, and I apologize for running a little bit late. We'll get one break in real quick. We'll come back. We'll spend a couple more minutes on this. And really, Mayo, I want you to stay on the line because you're up to date on everything Obamacare. And since you called in, I'd love to get you talking about it, okay? So hang tight, folks. We'll be right back. Listen to the Ed Spring Show right here on the MVM Radio Network.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
We've been spending the most of the hour talking about the Muslim Brotherhood connections, Barack Obama, Valerie Jarrett, and a whole host of others inside the White House. And the only reason it's relevant again, because nobody wants to talk about this. They've ignored it for years. But it becomes relevant again because of the situation in Egypt. Barack Obama turned his back on Mubarak after Mubarak had spent, you know, years being allies to the U.S., friends with the U.S., to install Sharia law-loving Muslim Mohamed Morsi, and now he was just taken over by a military coup. So it's clear not a whole lot of people are really into Sharia law, if even Egypt did that. You know, Mayo, we're talking about this, and it still is more and more disturbing every day. You know, we've got guys like Khalid al-Mansour. He's a Muslim lawyer, black nationalist. In 2008, they finally revealed that he was the one who had recommended, you know, Barack Obama for admission to Harvard Law School. He went through a guy by the name of Perry. And we've got all of these things together. But al-Mansour is an outspoken hater of the United States, hates Israel, hates white people. He's outspoken about it. I'm not making this up. He's accused the U.S. of plotting a genocide, trying to remove 15 million black people that they consider disposable. You know, he's told fellow blacks that whatever you do to white people, they deserve it. God wants you to do it. Cut their nose, cut out their ears, take flesh out of the body. Don't worry about it because God wants you to do it. So, you know, here we've got all of this. Khalid al-Mansour, of course, was raising money for Obama. You know, so we've got all of these things out there. And once again, nobody is doing anything about it. What's the problem here, Mayo?
It seems to be the same problem. I mean, since, you know, 4th of July, you know, tomorrow, Major Hassan, what's the last name? The major that, you know, went in crying Allah Akbar and killed the soldiers and civilians
on the army base. Yep.
Okay. Well, if most people don't know this and it hasn't been reported, but all of those soldiers who did survive and were wounded and civilians that worked in the, you know, the hall there, they were denied their benefits because it was ruled a workplace violence incident and not, you know, a terroristic attack.
Right. And you can't sue the U.S. government either, so they have no recourse.
Why? I mean, the guy's crying Allah Akbar. I mean, how delusional, demented, You know, what other dimension is your brain is where you can't see that, or you would deny the benefits to somebody, you know, who has chosen to protect, you know, your freedoms. I mean,
explain to me the difference.
That's a kick in the teeth to me.
Oh, it most certainly is. Explain the difference to me, because I don't get it either. You know, when you look at the Twin Towers falling, the Twin Towers fell due to what was considered a terrorist attack, and the surviving families were paid handsomely, you know, in most cases. I'm not trying to say they did deserve it, but they were paid for their losses, you know. So this is clearly a terrorist attack, you know, and we're denying military people the same right and everything else. I don't get it either. I really don't. And ultimately, too, there were many reports out there as well that this guy, they've been begging for some psychiatric help and everything else for him, and they refused to do anything about it.
Well, people were afraid, you know, the things you were talking about earlier of speaking up. I mean, at three different conferences where he mentioned, you know, different things and his thoughts. And I think at one time before prior, he had grown a beard in defiance and, you know, he was told shave it off or, you know, go to the brig. And then, you know, that person, because he had said that, was reprimanded instead of the Army major being reprimanded for going against, you know, Army doctrine, U.S. beliefs, Army beliefs.
I agree with you. And he had all kinds of problems, and they continued allowing him to stay there knowing. They knew in advance, because he had told the whole world he planned on doing something like that. They knew in advance. It was reported in advance what his plans were. And he was still not held accountable and allowed to run rampant, and that created a situation. You know, so
yeah,
I don't understand it either.
Yeah, I mean, and this was by, you know, well-educated, you know, career military men. The one lieutenant colonel that had written a paper, which, you know, it came out later, that was just kind of thrown in a file. It wasn't like it was just some buck private, you know, recently joined, who may or may not have been racist, saying something against this guy. These were his peers who were worried about him.
Right.
They were just told to ignore it. Turn the other cheek, or turn a blind eye. Well, that blind eye cost how many lives?
And it costs lives every day. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. You know, that one's an easy one to follow. But turning a blind eye and trying to install your own will is costing millions of lives every day around the world. You know, I mean, when you look at the violence in the Middle East and everything else, it's all U.S. directed. You know, there's thousands of lives being lost every day, including dozens and hundreds of soldiers. You know, it's to the point where we don't care. We've lost our moral compass, and I just don't get that. I want to switch gears for a second, man, because I know you're on top of a story. You've been emailing back and forth with me on this. Obamacare. We now know that Obamacare was passed, and lo and behold, now that the employer mandate is going to kick into gear, or was supposed to kick into gear on Monday, now the Obama administration is going to back off and say they're going to delay this for 1 year, forcing the employers, now they have until 2015 to give health care benefits to their employees. Is this really a big surprise? Every employer in the world went public, said they were going to cut back on full-time jobs and everything else so they could avoid these mandates, which, of course, is going to screw the economy and the tax base for the federal government. So this is really all about the government getting money. It has absolutely nothing to do with helping Americans, does it?
No, I mean, even not in America. If you just look locally the past year since, you know, the mandate has hit, and driving around, how many businesses have had now hiring part-time help out front, you know, on their signs? And the way the law is, even if you work two part-time jobs to make ends meet, you were still in non-compliance under Obamacare, and as a single male would have to pay the first fine, I believe, is $697 the first year, and then it goes up incrementally after that until you either purchase health insurance, you know, et cetera. I mean, Obama's own words, if you like your insurance, you can keep it. If you like your doctor, you can keep them. And, you know, that has become a fallacy. I mean, the here locally MSD that had to pay – per person to keep their insurance over $100,000, I think cost them like $15 and you know, something a person there. Obama, when it first came out, you know, his big speech, and I sent you the link to it at whitehouse.gov, you know, over 10 years this should only cost $900 billion. Well, I mean, the last CBO report as of May 2013, has estimated that it's going to cost $1.9 trillion, I believe they said the first 7 years, if I remember
right.
correctly.
Not yeah,
10,
we actually
but
covered
7.
That.
So,
right. We actually covered that here. And what's really interesting here is, I mean, for me, it's clearly obvious what the writing on the wall is. This thing has been getting so much pressure. Everybody knows Obamacare is a dismal failure. They know there's no way financially it can work. Democrats have been even pressuring Obama to back the hell off. We have prominent Democrats, other than Nancy Pelosi, of course, but there are prominent Democrats out there who have told Obama that this is not acceptable, it's not going to work, you're going to destroy us in elections. And ultimately, I think that's what it's about, because the Democrats want to take back the Senate. They want the Senate in 2014. This mandate was going to force every company to pay $2,000 for every uninsured employee that they had. So these companies were taking everybody to part-time status, so they didn't have to do all of that. And what ultimately happened here is, if it would have went into effect January the 1st, 2014, where are you at? You're right in the heart of the beginning of the election cycle. The real election cycle. You've got your primaries, and then you've got everything else, and the elections are going to be in November. So then you've got a full 8 or 9 months for the American people to live with the results of this. How likely is it anybody would vote for a Democrat if this thing went into effect on January the 1st of 2014? So it's nothing more than the Democrats and Obama sitting together and saying, okay, we have to delay this until after the elections. So in November, what they're going to do now is they're going to tout it out. And it's already started with Valerie Jarrett, our favorite Muslim in chief. She's already out there putting out a little saying that says, in our ongoing discussions with businesses, we've heard that you need the time to get this right. We are listening. That's nothing but a cop-out. All they listened to was the Democrats that they had to keep those seats with. They didn't listen to the American people, or they would have never passed this damn thing. Am I right on that?
No, I agree. I mean, some of the Democrats, at least, are waking up, because I can't remember how many. I sent you a link to the story, but there were so many Democrats that once they realized the actual effect in this, what is it, 1,972-page bill or 1,792-page bill, supposedly people that, you get to keep your insurance, et cetera, a lot of the unions thought they were protected, and now they're not. And when the Democrats realize that, there were some that actually joined the Republicans in calling for an appeal to Obamacare.
Right, and the sad thing is these people will still elect the Democrats next year. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's so behind, Nancy Pelosi's, we have to pass it so you can see what's in it. That's against, like, any law I know of for getting a bill through the House, Congress, et cetera, and against, Obama, what he said, everything, my presidency will be the most transparent. Any bill will be up online a week before so the people can read it. And I mean, heck, they only had, 3 days, 5 days when they got the bill? I can't read 1,792 pages in 3 days. Nobody
right.
can.
Right. I agree with you.
But the problem was, the cost. Nobody realized it. And it has gotten so bad, employer mandate, you're supposed to be able to go online to the insurance exchange, they called it, and there would be the government option, and then there should have been 8 other options from different, insurance companies, and then you would select, single, married, kids, no kids, et cetera, and you would pick the lowest plan that it was most affordable for you. And, but the problem was there wasn't enough money to even get the software written and the website up, so once it hit, the only plan was the insurance plan. I don't know if that came, helped part of this mandate being put off or not. I haven't gotten into it. But, I mean, there's like strike one, and strike two, he sends his appointee, Catherine Sebelius, he appointed her in 2008 as the Health and Human Services Secretary, and sends her out begging for money the 12 major insurance companies and healthcare executives.
Mm-hmm.
And, she was in trouble already prior to that at the Hatch Act, at a public appearance in her official capacity, telling people to vote for a certain governor in, what was it, North Carolina, South Carolina?
Right. I believe it was South Carolina.
But the Dems feel that they can do that. Oh, we're Teflon, so then she got caught doing that, and then just here recently, 3 weeks ago, there was a slush fund found hidden inside Obamacare, reported in Forbes magazines and a few others. And it's like, why isn't, you know, why does it take, you know, an average Joe like me or, you know, somebody that's more experienced in the media, an investigative, you know, like you, to tell these things when the lamestream media, they have so many more resources at their fingertips and could blow more of a lid off the cover of this, either pay informants or have more resources, have 10 people searching on, you know, the keyboard, internet, et cetera. you know, and getting the story out there, linking these things together, going, you know, A plus B equals C, which means, hey, that's not right.
Well, you're absolutely correct. And we're going to look more into these stories on Monday of next week. We really need to get into this Obamacare, what's really going on here, and start looking forward. I know it's a little early, but look forward to 2014 elections and what the game plan really is. Mayo, thanks so much for sticking around, man. I appreciate it, as always. It's time for us to get out of here. Couple of quick things, folks. I really have to tell you this, and it shouldn't come as any alarm or any shock to any of you, that we have some problems in our government today. I don't care if you're a Democrat or Republican. You have to admit the obvious. But the biggest problem that we have with our government today is the fact that very few get involved in making the changes. You look at the things that are going on with the Allison Leonard and Grimes race here against Mitch McConnell in Kentucky. This is not everything that it appears to be. You know, you get into the Obama White House, it sounds great to tell everybody they're going to get free health care, but nothing is free. You get into the way that our legal department is working today, thanks to the way that Eric Holder runs the Department of Justice, look at the runaway cops in every state and every city. Look at our own Supreme Court, who basically said the other day that Miranda rights don't matter. We'll cover that next week because we didn't get a chance to get into it. The bottom line is this. It's time to wake up and pay attention. You have to. It's your future. It's my future. It's our future. And if we don't come together and start demanding better from our elected leaders, what we're going through now is going to look like the biggest freedom era ever in America in about 10 years, when we all know today it's not. It's time to get involved. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow night, Rob Chapman should be here talking about Louisville issues and Louisville events. As we've stated before, Rob is covering for Dale Gillespie for the next few weeks. And then Dale, of course, will be back with his TNT Thursday Night Truth show. Tune in tomorrow night for all things local. I think that's about it. Don't forget our good friend Sunday night at 7 o'clock, Ken Moman with Liberty Unbridled as well. That's it. Have a great night, folks. Thanks for listening. Take care.